Welcome to the WBFO Press Pass. I'm Mark Scott, joined once again by Buffalo Spree editor Elizabeth Licata.
Hi, Mark.
How you doing? Spring is here.
That's what you say, Mark.
I'm optimistic, but a little
cool.
When
people are listening to this, I'm hoping it'll be a lot better.
Yeah. Well, let's begin. The May issue of Buffalo Spree has a couple of articles about some of Buffalo's crumbling neighborhoods and the efforts by some activists to reverse that blight. You wrote about the Broadway Fillmore neighborhood and the efforts to save one building in particular.
Well, you could say, you know, what's saving one building, because there are a lot of buildings at risk, particularly in that area on the east side. However, this is a corner building. It has a lot of great history to it. It was formerly a cigar shop and also a cigar factory. And all this history is known. It's could be a handsome building. Obviously, it's had some rough times. And it's also part of the streetscape that immediately leads up to the central terminal. So it's part of that core district where there's a lot of really beautiful old housing stock, much of which is, you know, unfortunately in some disrepair.
Well, there are people like Eddie Dobashevitz who are working to stop the blight, but unfortunately it's really hard because you can't carry out a preservation plan without financial resources.
That's right. There needs to be a movement. I've been talking to Eddie and also to Marty Binias, who has worked with Eddie on a lot of this. And although there's been movement towards, for example, the old First Ward, you know, I think there's going to be a lot of exciting things happening there, a lot of exciting things happening on the west side. This Broadway Fillmore area, which has so much history and so many wonderful buildings and institutions, it's hard to get the momentum going to get people over there and get a bunch of, you know, maybe hopefully young people to start buying houses and settling there. That would really help. This is just one building, but obviously much more is needed.
Well, I read your article, and there was the front page article in the Buffalo News recently about the ideas for restoring the central terminal. I get a sense from all this that there isn't much optimism about this particular neighborhood compared to others like the First Ward, as you mentioned, or what's happening in other parts of the city.
Well, there are good things happening in spots. But they aren't coalescing. For example, there's the urban farming movement that I think is really exciting. And that's all happening on the east side. That's where that's happening. There's the wonderful urban habitat project right by the Central Terminal. And there's a lot of exciting plans that people have for the Central Terminal. But it's not coming together. And I think that a lot of people have given up hope on it. Many people, you see everyone go there. I'm sure you went there over Easter. But then what happens to the rest of the year? Some people think there's too much nostalgia about the area and not enough action by committed young people who are part of the future, not part of the area's past.
Well, there are other people working hard in other neighborhoods, people such as Patty McDonald, who has formed a grassroots group called Project Slumlord. And the group has even put out a guide called How to Fight a Slumlord. What are some of the ways she suggests of doing that?
Well, basically, you really have to be persistent because, as Patty says, and a lot of other people say as well, all the laws are on the books to fight housing blight, to get housing inspectors in there, to have them written up for court. The problem is enforcement. But there is a step-by-step process. You can use the 311 system. You can work with your council member. That's always very helpful. But it just takes a very strong, concerted effort, and you just can't give up. You have to be that squeaky wheel. I think that's the main thing.
I was struck by the very fact there are adequate laws.
It's, oh, absolutely.
You know, so what's happening here?
Absolutely. It's enforcement. It's having someone care enough in City Hall to enforce these laws, and maybe the fines need to be higher so that it means something.
And then city court is backlogged, too.
Yes.
The housing court.
Yes, housing court is backlogged. It is a problem, but there just needs to be a concerted. People need to care about this. They need to make it a priority. And we're not so sure that it's really a priority in City Hall.
But it appears the Common Council is offering a sympathetic ear, at least, on part of some council members.
Yes, some council members are very good. And in fact, I found just from you know, my own experience in Allentown, that you, if you ask your council member, they will work with you. But not everyone has the access. Not everyone. It should be something that doesn't mean pulling strings and driving someone crazy with 1,000 phone calls. Yeah. It should work better than that.
And one of the initiatives,
I mean, that's what the 311 system is supposed to help do, is to automate it so that these problems go right through the system and you don't have to make personal visits and phone calls and make everything into a special project.
Yeah. And one of the initiatives you're also talking about in the May issue is something called a data portal that would make it easier for people to access information. Other cities do this.
Oh,
Buffalo
yes.
does not.
Yes. If you saw some of the other cities, if you went to these websites, how beautiful they are, how easy to navigate, how easy it is to find everything. We have a big website. It has a lot of data on it, but it's not organized in a way that people can easily find the answers that they need. They're there somewhere, but it takes some patience. I don't think it would be too hard to put it together.
Before we move on, let's end our discussion on this topic on a positive note. On this very program in its early days, I remember talking with Buffalo Rising's Newell Nussbaumer about the old white livery stable on the west side. Its days were numbered. Demolition was imminent.
Everyone expected that to be demolished. And
but cooler
look at
heads
it.
Prevailed, and you have in the May issue a photo of the restored white livery apartments that are now renting.
They're now renting, yes. It's really wonderful. And it just shows you that the people who just think, oh, just tear it down, no one's ever going to do anything, those people are usually wrong. If you leave the building up, and especially when it's in a great area like that, something's going to happen. I've seen a lot of buildings in Allentown and elsewhere where people were, you know, sounding the death knell for them. Oh, no, no one will ever. I can't tell you how many times I've heard that said. And they're almost always wrong.
Despite the unseasonable cold of the past week, we have had a taste of spring, and we all know you're an avid gardener, so are you really anxious to jump into your garden?
Oh, I have been working in the garden when I can. I do a lot of spring cleanup. I avoid fall cleanup because winter takes care of a lot of the things that I would have had to clean up in the fall. So I wait until spring when there's fewer, you know, old branches and leaves and things like that to pull away. So I do that. And I also, there's things you can plant at this time. You can plant, for example, a lot of people are putting out their pansies and so on. And even in these temperatures, I have a huge pot of them in front of my house. They look great, even when it's going down to 29 at night.
I heard from someone that this week's massive snow was actually a good thing because it insulated the ground and the dirt's going to be a little bit better to work with, or is that just an urban myth?
Well, that's not really how snow insulation works. Snow insulation starts with your first big snowfall, but the trick, like say in December, okay? And then the trick is to have the ground covered with snow throughout until, say, March. That's perfect snow insulation, which I think we almost had this winter. That ought to have kept a lot, and that does, it's a blanket.
Yeah.
And it does keep the, so they're halfway right.
Okay.
Just one little day of snow isn't going to really do anything except be really annoying.
Now, you have a fun article in the May issue about what's in and what's out in gardening. Can you share one or two?
Oh, my favorite thing in the what's in, what's out, and I actually did get this from a trend report, and I usually don't like the trend reports because I tend to think they're advertiser-driven, but the bedhead garden, the messy garden, and I think that should be good news to a lot of Buffalo gardeners, where it doesn't need to be carefully groomed with spaces between all the plants and just like a wild kind of English garden-type look with really hardy perennials sort of jostling each other, sometimes almost like a meadow look. So having your garden not be totally neat all the time, I can get behind that.
Yeah.
That's my favorite.
Now, the May issue cover story is about food and the trend toward small plates. What do you mean by that?
Well, when you I mean, on a traditional menu, you have your appetizers and your entrees. So using a traditional menu, instead of ordering any entrees, you might order four appetizers and split them between, like, say, if you and your wife are out or maybe you're out with another couple, you might get six of them and pass them around and try different things. So you get to have more variety with your dinner when you're out. And a lot of restaurants now have small plate, large small plate menus that offer great variety. And I find that that's where you really get the chef's creativity, is with a lot of these appetizers and small plates.
I have a question. I haven't had a chance to read the articles yet, but does the small plate translate into perhaps a smaller price, or are they still charging a premium, even though the portions are smaller?
I think it can be. Yeah. I think you end up ordering less. I mean, how often have you taken home doggy bags when you go out to restaurants? Oh, yeah. And it's sort of, you don't really need to eat as much as we were given with your traditional entree, with usually a large protein on the plate and a big serving of starch and then your vegetables. But with a small plate, it's just one dish that's been very carefully put together. And if you share four of them, it just sort of keeps your appetite excited. And you might not order as much food as if you, like, I don't even know how people can have appetizers and then entrees with everything that comes with an entree. So I think it does cost less.
Yeah, yeah. One other thing, a nice article about someone who is really well-liked and respected in our field of broadcasting.
Yes.
Channel 2's Claudine Ewing. There's nobody better. We all love Claudine.
There is credit where credit is due, and I actually just heard from her today. She's very excited about the article, even though for some unfortunate reason she hasn't seen it. So she needs to become a subscriber. That's the only fault I can find with her. But we're very, very pleased to run an article about Claudine.
Elizabeth, thanks very much for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Mark. It's always great.
Elizabeth Licata is editor of Buffalo Spree. Mark Scott, WBFO News.